Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Troubling new allegations are emerging in a lawsuit filed against Boy Scouts of America. Attorneys suing the Scouts, including a San Diego attorney, allege that the organization hid numerous cases of alleged abuse, including some here in East County. We'll have details on today's show. A citizens group in Lemon Grove has launched a petition drive to put a sales tax increase on the ballot next March. Find out why on today's show. In our agricultural report, learn what are the growing fields for local farmers as we share results of the county's annual crop report. An excessive heat warning has been issued for later this week due to triple-digit temperatures in our desert areas, and we'll have details. On Green Scene, hear an update on the reintroduction of wolves in California. Plus, learn about several blood drives coming up in East County and how you can donate blood to help save lives. From Public News Service, learn about a bill introduced in Sacramento to make it easier for women with young children to apply for certain benefits. The city of El Cajon is looking to crack down on retailers caught selling tobacco to children. Several county parks are closed this month due to heat. Plus, we'll have some hiking safety tips for you on today's show. The Jamul del Zura Planning Commission has a vacancy to fill. If you live in the area and would like to have a say in local land use decisions, we'll tell you how to apply later on today. And then on Destination East County, hear about some outdoor activities and festivities coming up across East County, from twilight hikes and stargazing to outdoor concerts, movies, a grape stomp party, and Native American powwows. Later on, we'll be re-airing our interview with Corey Briggs, a prominent attorney running for San Diego City Attorney, on a platform of open government and taxpayer watchdog issues. And finally, we have a warning for Warner Springs residents about hantavirus found in a deer mouse in the community. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
A new lawsuit alleges that Boy Scouts of America, BSA, covered up names of some sexual abusers, the Washington Post reports. In a press conference, attorneys from Abused in Scouting say that researchers have found 350 names of suspected pedophiles were left off a blacklist with some 5,000 names previously made public. Those lists cite alleged abuse cases in our region, including San Diego, El Cajon, La Mesa, Mount Laguna, Palomar Mountain, and Poway. San Diego attorney Van Arsdale is with AVA Law, a local firm that is one of three firms nationally working with Abused in Scouting. At a press conference in Washington, D.C. this past week, he said, "We as a group can start to change things and make sure that the next generation of kids does not have to suffer the way they did." The Abused in Scouting website has a searchable database by area and by troop. Attorneys for alleged victims say their clients range in age from 14 to 97. The most recent suit, filed in Pennsylvania, alleges a young teen scout, now an adult, was sexually abused hundreds of times and suffered serious depression as a result, NBC reports. Attorneys anticipate that the scouts could file for bankruptcy, since insurance companies have refused to cover payments in some abuse cases, claiming scouts could have taken preventive actions. If bankruptcy is filed, a judge would set a strict cutoff date for future suits alleging abuse, as assets are divided up to pay off debts, including any settlements or court wins in abuse cases already filed. Attorney Stuart Eisenberg says, "That means that these criminals may never be known by the public, which is a safety concern for all. Attorneys are urging all victims to come forward now to protect their rights. Statutes of limitation may limit some filings, though a bill in Sacramento proposes to raise the maximum age in California for filing lawsuits over childhood sexual assault from 26 to 40, or within 5 years of discovering harm from the abuse. Some 400 lawsuits have already been filed. The Los Angeles Times compiled and published the earlier list of known and suspected abusers in 2012, using court records and other documents. The ineligible volunteer files since renamed the Volunteer Screening Database, include hundreds of cases never reported by the Boy Scouts to authorities. Instead, the scouting organization urged alleged abusers to resign without disclosing the reasons. The Scouts fought in court to keep those names secret, arguing that confidentiality was important to protect anyone falsely accused as well as privacy of victims. A researcher hired by the Scouts reportedly identified 12,254 victims and 7,819 suspected abusers spanning 1944 to 2016. In at least 125 cases, molestation of Scouts continued by leaders previously reported to Scouts for alleged abuse, the San Diego Union-Tribune reported in May. The Boy Scouts organization, in statements issued to the Los Angeles Times and other media, has voiced regret over handling of some past cases by local troops, but maintains there was no national intent to cover up allegations that range from child molestation to rape. We care deeply about all victims of abuse and sincerely apologize to anyone who was harmed during their time in scouting, a statement to the Times reads, adding, we believe victims, we support them, we pay for counseling by a provider of their choice, and we encourage them to come forward. The Boy Scouts has also indicated it has changed procedures in recent years to protect boys enrolled in its programs. These measures include mandatory reporting to law enforcement and criminal background checks for Scout leaders, including 120 men reported to law enforcement by the Scouts. Scouts maintain these changes have been effective. Last year, there were only 5 known cases of sexual abuse. There are currently 2.4 million Boy Scouts in the U.S. and nearly 1 million leaders, according to the organization's website. Some troops did take steps, even years ago, to protect boys from abuse as well as protect Scout leaders from potentially false charges. One former local Scout leader has told East County Magazine that at his troop in East County, Scout leaders were prohibited from being alone with any child except their own. That included camping trips, as well as meetings, such as at a scoutmaster's home, to review progress toward earning merit badges, when a family member of either the scoutmaster or the child was required to be present. The Scouts have gone through more major changes. Several years ago, a court ruling found Scouts' prohibition against gay Scouts and scoutmasters to be unconstitutional, so the organization became more inclusive in its admissions. Recently, for the first time in its 100-year history, Boy Scouts of America began admitting girls, as well as boys. The Boy Scouts programs for girls under the name Scouts BSA are entirely separate from the long-standing Girl Scouts of America organization. All Boy Scouts of America programs promise young members, quote, fun, adventure, learning, challenge, and responsibility to help them become the best versions of themselves, unquote, in the Scouts year-round programs. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gerald Stevenson.
For several years now, Lemon Grove has been struggling financially. But now, a group of residents led by former Councilman George Gastel is gathering signatures on a ballot initiative to raise Lemon Grove's sales tax by 0.75 cents, an action the Vote Yes for the Lemon Grove Tax Committee estimates would raise about $3 million. Lemon Grove is geographically small and has many low-income residents, so its property tax revenues are lower than surrounding cities. The city has no shopping mall and doesn't have a large number of big-box retailers or car dealers to generate sales tax either. Around 80% of revenues go to sheriff and fire services to protect public safety, leaving only about 20% to fund everything else, such as road repairs, parks, and recreation programs, as well as services for the homeless. There's little or no fat left to cut. In recent years, the city even eliminated its recreation department, although it retained some recreational services moved to a different department. Residents have been clamoring for more money to be spent on traffic controls, fixing potholes, increasing law enforcement patrols, and addressing the homelessness problem, among other things. But there's just not enough money to do so. The measure would raise Lemon Grove's sales tax to 8.5%, the same as La Mesa's. El Cajon has an 8.25% sales tax, and Santee is the lowest in East County at 7.75%, the same as Lemon Grove's present rate. The city of Lemon Grove faces a $400,000 deficit by the end of next year, and that deficit is projected to reach nearly $1.2 million by 2022. Gastel served on the Lemon Grove Council for 10 years, and he's planning to run for the council again next year. He recalls weathering two budget crises in the past and says he's trying to help the city avoid another one. He told the San Diego Union-Tribune, "If people want the fire department and the sheriff's department to be able to help them when they need it, we have to find a way to pay. If people want programs at the rec center and to keep the parks clean, these things cost money." The group needs 1,489 valid signatures to qualify for the March ballot, and it's aiming to collect 3,000 names. Last year, the Lemon Grove City Council considered two sales tax measures. One was a half-cent sales tax increase. The other would have raised business license fees and created a new tax on marijuana dispensaries. Both required a supermajority of 4 votes, but failed by a 3-2 margin, with Councilmembers Jerry Jones and Matt Mendoza voting no. Jones, in an interview last year with East County Magazine, said he objected to asking voters to, quote, give us your money and trust us, unquote, on how the money would be spent. He wanted to see a survey of the public before approving any new tax measure. Those supporting the initiative include Mayor Raquel Vasquez and Councilmember Jennifer Mendoza, who says funds will be spent on law enforcement, cleanup, and seeking matching grants for projects such as sidewalks, parking lot improvements, and economic development that might bring a hotel to Lemon Grove to generate revenues for the city. But not everyone supports the effort. Teresa Rosiak Prophet says she is not in favor of the increase, adding, "We need more fiscal responsibility from our leaders." Rosiak Prophet, who ran unsuccessfully for the council in 2018, told East County Magazine, "Our merchants are already suffering, and consumers already go out of Lemon Grove with their spending, so this will happen even more." She wants to see more economic development efforts to bring new businesses into the city. "Our residents are just barely making it now," she says, "and their voices should be heard. Why give more money to the people that are misusing the money that already have been given?" They already have been given, she points out, citing lawsuits against the city that are costing taxpayers money. A citizens' oversight group is planned if the initiative is successful, organizers say, to assure that the funds are appropriately spent on projects that meet with the approval of the public and the council. The city's financial straits have become so dire that there has been even talk of disincorporating as a city and exploring whether the county could take back control of Lemon Grove, meaning the city would revert back to unincorporated status. It's unclear whether the county would even accept the financially struggling community, however. The relatively young city recently celebrated its 40th anniversary, but how much longer it can survive may hinge on voters' decision at the ballot box if the initiative gets enough signatures to qualify. City Manager Lydia Romero is relieved to hear of the initiative effort to help Lemon Grove succeed and thrive for another 40 years, in her view. She told the Union Tribune, "This restores my faith in this community." Reporting for East County Magazine from Lemon Grove, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're gonna keep 'em down on the farm after they've
seen. This is Jonathan Getz with East County Magazine's Agricultural Report. San Diego County's annual crop report is out, showing that some agriculture enterprises are growing businesses in our region. The county's top 10 crops reached their highest total values in a decade, though total agricultural values dipped slightly by a scant 0.25%. Altogether, San Diego farmers raised nearly $1.7 billion worth of crops in 2018. The top crop continues to be ornamental trees and shrubs, which rose 10% in value last year. Next are bedding plants, which rose just under 2%. Not surprisingly, after years of drought, cacti and succulents, the number 3 crop category, soared 34% in value. Lemons and tomatoes also saw increased sales, holding their spots on the top 10 lists of local crops. Wine grapes grew 19% in sales, while livestock and poultry sales rose 3%. Oranges dropped nearly 13%, but are still on the top 10 crops in our region. Avocados are still the number 4 crop countywide, despite a 1% dip. Overall, fruit and nut crops dropped just under 3%, while vegetable and vine crops dipped 4%. Honey and other bee products fell 9%, while the eggs and chicken market had a sharp 14% drop. County supervisors have taken several recent actions to boost agriculture, including creating a boutique winery ordinance to promote the creation of small wineries, approving a new beekeeping ordinance that allows more beekeeping while protecting the public, adopting an agricultural easement program that preserves agricultural space, as well as streamlining regulations for cheesemaking, agritourism, and on-site horticultural sales.
The National Weather Service has issued an excessive heat watch for San Diego County's desert areas starting Wednesday morning through Thursday evening with hot weather forecast countywide. High temperatures in the desert are forecast to reach 112 to 116 degrees, with overnight lows remaining in the 80s. These prolonged hot temperatures will create a dangerous situation that can lead to heat cramps, heat exhaustion, or even heat stroke. Elsewhere in the county, hot, dry weather is expected to last through Friday. Temperatures could reach 99 degrees in Campo, 89 in Julian, 95 in Alpine, and 82 degrees in coastal San Diego communities. Do not leave children or pets in parked vehicles during this heat, even for a few minutes. Drink plenty of fluids and stay in an air-conditioned room if possible. Avoid the sun, carry plenty of water if driving, and be sure to check up on relatives and neighbors, especially those who are elderly or disabled. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Gene Carpenter with a Green Scene Report. Like the grizzly bear, wolves were exterminated from California in the 1920s, but now they are making a comeback. In the past several years, wolves have crossed into Northern California from Oregon, and several litters of wolf pups have been born. In 2014, gray wolves received endangered species protection status from the state of California. A pack in Lassen County recently had pups for the third year in a row. The pack's female has been found to be related to a Wyoming wolf pack and not closely related to the male wolf from Oregon. This year's pack has three wolves, following litters of five pups and four pups the last 2 years. Amarek Weiss, senior West Coast wolf advocate of the Center for Biological Diversity, calls it incredibly exciting to learn that the Lassen wolf pack has a new litter of pups. Weiss adds, for the third year in a row, California's only existing wolf pack has produced hope for a future with wolves on the landscape. Now we need more wolves to come into California so when these pups grow up, they can find mates and have pups of their own. Wolves have been spotted in several other areas of California. Radio collars on some of the wolves show that they are widely traveled. One female wolf was found to have traveled over 1,100 miles through 9 different Northern California counties. Trail cameras have also been useful in documenting wolves in our state, and not all are related to the Lassen pack. Not all of the wolves seen in recent years have survived. One was found dead after killing a calf, though it is now illegal to kill a wolf in California. Ranchers are encouraged to use specially trained dogs to protect herds of cattle, sheep, or other livestock from wolves and other predators. The public is encouraged to report wolf sightings to the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, which has a gray wolf sighting report on its webpage.
The San Diego Blood Bank is hosting blood drives coming up at 3 locations in East County. The first is at the Broken Yoke Cafe parking lot in Rancho San Diego on Saturday, August 24th, from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. And then on Sunday, August 25th, the blood bank will be at the Guardian Angels Catholic Church in Santee from 8:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. in the auditorium. Next, the bloodmobile will be at Cuyamaca College, parked in the quad area on both Monday and Tuesday, August 26th and 27th, from 10:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Anyone 17 and older who weighs at least 114 pounds and is in good health may be eligible to donate blood and help save lives. A good meal and plenty of fluids are recommended before giving blood. All donors must show a photo ID. Donors are encouraged to schedule an appointment ahead of time to donate, but walk-ins are also welcome. To schedule an appointment or for more information, you can visit sandiegobloodbank.org or you can call 1-800-MY-SDBB. That's 1-800-MY-SDBB, as in San Diego Blood Bank. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The California legislature comes back from summer break today, and children's advocacy groups want them to take up a bill to link the Medi-Cal and WIC food assistance programs as a kind of one-stop shop for eligibility. About 87,000 low-income children who receive WIC benefits in the Golden State qualify for Medi-Cal but are not signed up. Karen Farley with the California WIC Association says the eligibility requirements are the same, so there's no reason people should spend so many hours filling out extra forms.
It can be like a full-time job trying to apply to all of the programs that you might be eligible for, and especially if you are a parent with a couple kids and you don't have a car, which a lot of low-income families don't.
Assembly Bill 526 would get the ball rolling on express lane eligibility in the enrollment process. The federal government would fund most of the system interoperability changes at a 90-10 split. The state has already agreed to cover any extra children who enroll. Data show that families who get WIC assistance have fewer problems with low birth weight babies, preterm births, anemia, and childhood obesity. Kristen Golden Testa with the Children's Partnership says kids who get health insurance from the start also can avoid a lifetime of chronic disease.
Because as soon as a child gets into health care, the better, because then we can get them the care that they need and identify any problems should they arise early that could help them in the lifelong pursuit of health.
Advocates for the bill say they're optimistic that it will become law because Governor Gavin Newsom has long called for smart government programs that would improve outcomes for young children. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is John Fistier with East County Magazine's Local Government Report in El Cajon. El Cajon City Council is considering tough new penalties for retailers caught selling tobacco to minors. The council has asked staff to prepare recommendations, including cracking down harder the very first time a retailer violates the law, since there have been 43 instances of first-time offenders selling tobacco to youths under age 21 in the past 2 years. Councilman Gary Kendrick has long spearheaded efforts to protect children from accessing tobacco products. According to the Centers for Disease Control, half of all smokers will die from smoking-related illnesses, Kendrick points out. He says these tobacco sellers are profiting off the future suffering of our children. Back in 2004, El Cajon adopted a strict tobacco retailer's license that gave the city the power to slap heavy fines on stores selling cigarettes or other tobacco products to minors. Repeat offenders could have their tobacco license suspended or permanently revoked. 5 years ago, the city updated its ordinance to add e-cigarette vaping products as well as hookahs. The effectiveness of the original ordinance has dropped off in recent years. At least three other members of the council, council members Steve Goebel, Phil Ortiz, and Bob McClellan, agreed in discussions at the last council meeting that more needs to be done to dissuade stores from selling tobacco to underage customers. Under the city's current law, first-time violators can pay a fine instead of losing their license to sell tobacco products for 30 days. And many do just that. After a second offense, violators may be charged a fine and lose their license for 90 days. By the third offense, they can lose their license for a year and pay a fine. If a fourth violation occurs, the license is permanently revoked. Options could include much higher fines or mandatory license suspensions for first offenders. The measure is expected to be considered at the El Cajon Council's October 24th meeting.
Six San Diego County parks will be closed in August, a safety measure taken each year because of the month's typically high temperatures. The closure also provides parks and recreation staff an opportunity to conduct maintenance such as trail restoration. El Capitan Preserve in Lakeside, Hell Hole Canyon Preserve in Valley Center, Mount Gower Preserve near Ramona, and Wilderness Gardens in Pala will close August 1st through August 31st. Agua Caliente Regional Park in Anza Borrego and Vallecito County Park in the desert are closed all summer and will reopen Labor Day weekend. Fortunately, there are more than 100 other county parks and preserves to explore during August. For instance, visitors can stay overnight in new cabins at Dos Picos County Park in Ramona, visit a butterfly garden at Lindo Lake County Park in Lakeside, or enjoy summer movies in the park in the evening at several county parks. You can find these parks and more at sdparks.org. parks.org. Cleveland National Forest, a federal wilderness area, has had many rescues on its trails leading to Cedar Creek Falls and Three Sisters Falls due to heat exhaustion. The sheriff's search and rescue team recently had to airlift out a family of five. Steep trails are also dangerous for dogs in hot weather. Several dogs have died in the Cowles Mountain Trail in Mission Trails Regional Park, for example. If you go out for a hike on any trails in San Diego's backcountry, follow these safety tips. Let someone know where you will be and when you plan to return. Hike with others, never alone. Leave your dog at home for difficult hikes, since even short hikes may be too much for your dog when the air or ground are too hot. Take plenty of water to stay hydrated. Rangers recommend about 1 quart per person for every 2 to 3 miles. Also bring ample food. Wear sunscreen, a hat, and sunglasses, and bring sunscreen to reapply. Take breaks in shade if possible. Take a fully charged mobile phone, GPS, and a map. Wear lightweight, light-colored, ventilated clothing, and bring a jacket if you plan to stay out after dusk. Be sure to wear sturdy shoes with traction for slippery rocks. Follow all posted safety rules. Also bring a flashlight, first aid kit, multi-purpose tool, and a whistle to signal rescuers in case you become lost or injured. And finally, know your limitations. Choose trails that match your level of physical fitness to maximize your enjoyment and minimize risk. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gerald Stevenson.
The Hamul Dulzura Community Planning Group has an immediate opening for a new member. The volunteer position will be filled by appointment. This is an opportunity to be involved in land use decisions in the communities. The board meets twice a month on the second and fourth Tuesdays at 7:30 p.m. at the Oak Grove Middle School Library. If you're a resident in the district and you are interested in being appointed to fill this position, you can contact the board secretary, Janet Mulder, by calling 619-588-5672, or you can email Janet at jmulder02@gmail.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County features
stargazing and a twilight walk at Mission Trails Regional Park,
beat the heat activities at Stelzer Park in Lakeside, DJ nights at Viejas Roller Rink in Alpine, the Captain Marvel movie at Wells Park in El Cajon, an Elvis tribute concert in Lemon Grove and also in El Cajon, Queen Nation in concert in Santee, the Cajon Speedway Family Night, and more.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming events, including powwows at Barona and Sequan, a Sky Hunters demonstration with Birds of Prey in Julian, a Laurel and Hardy comedy night in Spring Valley, the Campo Grape Picking and Stomping Party, and more.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many others. The last of La Mesa's outdoor summer movies will be a screening of Mary Poppins Returns on August 16th at dusk in MacArthur Park. Bring a picnic along with a blanket or lawn chair to enjoy this family activity in the park.
You're invited to join Mission Trails Regional Park volunteers and members from the San Diego Astronomy Association for viewings of the night sky through telescopes on August 16th at the Kumeyaay Lake Campground from 7:30 to 10:30 p.m. Members of the San Diego Astronomy Association will be set up with their telescopes at the far end of the Kumeyaay Lake Campground's day use lot. Please avoid the use of flashlights and white light in the area of the events.
You're invited to join trail guides at Mission Trails Regional Park in a twilight walk on August 17th from 7 to 9 p.m. You'll learn about changes that occur at dusk as the sun goes down. Meet at the parking lot at the corner of Bushy Hill Drive and Father Sarah Trail, and that's across from the Kumeyaay Lake Campground. Bring a flashlight for this event, plus an extra layer of clothes since it often cools down after the sun goes down. For more information, you can visit mtrp.org. That's the Mission Trails Regional Park website.
Hey kids, County Parks invites you to come beat the heat at Lewis Stelzer Park in Lakeside on August 18th from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Participants can enjoy sprinklers, water guns, and water games while learning how to conserve water and stay cool during the hotter months. Be sure to wear sunscreen, bring a water bottle to stay hydrated, and wear clothes that can get wet. For more information, call the park at 619-561-0580.
Every Saturday night from 5 to 9 p.m. now through August 31st is DJ night at the roller rink at Via House Outlets in Alpine. DJ Blues plays favorite hits while attendees skate the night away. For more information, you can visit viejas.com.
El Cajon's Movie in the Park series ends August 17th with a showing of Captain Marvel at Wells Park. Guests can enjoy additional fun activities before the start of the movie at nightfall.
Lemon Grove's summer concert series continues every Thursday evening through August 22nd from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Berry Street Park. The last concerts are an August 8th Elvis tribute titled Suspicious Minds, followed by Rachel Aldous and The Road Home Country on August 17th, closing out the season with The Routine performing Funk and Soul on August 22nd.
El Cajon's popular dinner and a concert series is held each Friday evening at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon from 6 to 8 p.m. Shows will continue through September. You can bring a picnic dinner or dine early at one of the many restaurants nearby before rocking out to the outdoor concerts. Upcoming concerts include a tribute to Woodstock with the Stand Up Guys August 16th, an Elvis tribute with Scott Bruce on August 23rd, and Lightning Train doing Western Swing August 30th. For full details, visit downtownelcajon.com.
Santee's Summer Concert Series is being held from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Town Center Community Park East on Thursday nights. The last two concerts of the season are Queen Nation performing a tribute to the rock band Queen on August 15th and the Mighty Untouchables on August 22nd performing Motown, classic rock, Latin, country, and more.
The La Mesa Village Association rolls out its La Mesa Classic Car Show each Thursday running through August. This event features pre-1974 cars, trucks, and vans. The event will feature DJs and live bands located at 3rd and La Mesa Boulevard and an award giveaway at each event honoring the night's best car. August 15th features live music by Total Recall, and on August 22nd, there's an air guitar contest and a women's auto maintenance class. The final night on August 29th has live music by the Sears Brothers.
El Cajon's Classic Cruise Nights is celebrating its centennial season. You can view classic cars every Wednesday from 5 to 8 p.m. along Main Street in the heart of downtown El Cajon. August 14th is Cajon Speedway Family Night, followed by the Rat Rod Rally on August 22nd and Harley-Davidson Night August 29th. For a full schedule of events, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
The 49th Annual Barona Powwow takes place Friday, August 30th through Sunday, September 1st. At the Barona Sports Complex on the Barona Indian Reservation. The public is welcome to come and watch native dancers and drummers from across the nation compete at the powwow, where you can also find craft vendors and food, such as tacos made with Native American fry bread.
Sky Hunters invite you to William Heiss County Park in Julian on Saturday, August 31st from 5 to 6 p.m. to learn all about hawks, owls, falcons, and eagles. Have you ever wondered what you would do if you found a sick or injured raptor, or if there were any laws to protect these magnificent birds? This program is not only educational, but it also allows you to view these amazing birds closer than you normally would in the wild.
Saps at Sea, the San Diego chapter of the Sons of the Desert, the official Laurel and Hardy Fan Society, invites you to their next meeting on August 31st in Williams Hall at Trinity Presbyterian Church in Spring Valley. The doors open at 6:30 for the 7 p.m. show. This month, you can watch Stan and Ollie escape the law and end up at the top of a skyscraper under construction in the film Liberty, with an accompanying musical score played by the Saps' own Russ Peck. This month's guest comedians are Thelma Todd and Patsy Kelly in Air Fright. After intermission, the Saps will screen Flying Deuces. For more information, you can visit the Saps at Sea San Diego Facebook page.
The Sequan Band of the Kumeyaay Nation will hold its 30th annual powwow from Friday evening, September 6th through Sunday, September 8th at the Sequan Powwow Ground next to the casino. The event features bird singing and Native American dance competitions, drumming, Native arts and craft vendors, foods, and more.
Campo Creek Vineyards on Highway 94 in Campo will host a grape picking and stomping party complete with barbecue on September 7th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The event admission includes barbecue tri-tip and chicken provided by Hefty Boy Barbecue and one beverage. Additional drink tickets are available along with wine by the glass, water, and soda. RSVPs are requested by September 1st at 619-478-2222 or online at campocreekvineyards.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back soon with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. My very special guest today is Corey Briggs. He has a two-decades-long record as an attorney challenging insider power brokers who've dominated City Hall for decades. He's been described by Times of San Diego as the bane of downtown developers, and he's filed numerous lawsuits, many of them successfully championing taxpayers, voters' rights, the environment, and government transparency. He's also taught law, including courses in professional ethics, and now he's running for San Diego City Attorney against the incumbent Mara Elliott, promising to be a taxpayer's advocate if elected. And full disclosure, listeners, he also once wrote a letter on behalf of East County Magazine, our media outlet, to get a local school district, Cajon Valley, to stop violating California's open government law and cease threatening to arrest our reporters for recording public meetings. Corey, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So you have a successful law practice. What made you decide to jump into politics and run for city attorney?
Yeah, a lot of people are asking me this question. It's a good question. Look, I've been fighting City Hall for almost two decades, as you said, and running for office was never on my bucket list. But I see the consequences of not having good professional legal advice given to the client, in this case, the city. And I've been watching it administration after administration. And the city faces big issues. But if you read the news, you see that frequently the city ends up in court, and it usually ends up on the wrong side of the cases. And this costs taxpayers a lot of money. It costs the city progress. And it's time for the mayor and the city council to have a lawyer who's giving them sound legal advice without the lawyer's political agenda being what drives the advice.
Could you give us an example or two of a couple of those cases where
Sure.
they were on the wrong side, where you would have advised them differently?
Yeah, sure. So probably the example that comes to mind easiest is the two lawsuits over SDSU West and Soccer City.
Yeah.
Right? The city attorney was opposed to these measures from the very beginning. She wrote memos that were critical of those proposals. These were put on the ballot by the voters. The city council and the mayor all said they're going to the ballot. And the city attorney's office pushed hard in secret to get permission to file lawsuits. The lawsuits were frivolous. The lawsuits were thrown out. The lawsuits cost the taxpayers about $600,000. One of my clients had me intervene on behalf of the voters to make sure that the voters would have their say on these items. The city attorney's office fought it. This makes no sense. The public spoke. The public wanted a say. The politicians had years to do something without going to the ballot, and they couldn't get their act together.
Yeah, true.
And so when the voters finally said, enough is enough, we want to vote on these two proposals, the city attorney used taxpayer money to try to disenfranchise San Diego voters. That's not acceptable, and it's all driven by politics because she was opposed to these from the beginning. She was humiliated in court when the cases were thrown out. She's got something to prove. And the latest example on this was just in Voice of San Diego today about how there's a non-disclosure agreement over the negotiations on SDSU, between SDSU and the city. And the voters have already voted on it. We know what this is supposed to look like. So why are we doing this in secret?
Yeah, it seems very troubling. And speaking of secrecy, can you also address what you have characterized as her efforts to gut the California Public Records Act and how your approach to that would differ?
Sure. So earlier this year, the city attorney's office proposed changes to the California Public Records Act. You know this. I will tell it for the benefit of your listeners. Mm-hmm. That's the law that allows any member of the public to go see public information.
Right.
So the Brown Act is the law that requires meetings to be done in open. The Public Records Act is the law that lets you see the documents, the emails, the text messages, things like that. And the city attorney's office proposed a change that was presented as one thing to make it easier to get documents, when in fact, the real purpose of the law was to make it nearly impossible for citizens to hire lawyers to go to court to enforce these rules.
Mm.
And the members of the legislature who carried this proposed legislation, they were not told the true nature of the changes. And all of this is being spearheaded by a chief of staff for the city attorney who is not a lawyer. He's the number two in the office. He's not a lawyer. He's learned more about the law from traffic school than law school. And the impetus for all of this was a very humiliating defeat that the city had a couple years back in court, where it would represent to the judge that the city had turned over all the documents. And on multiple occasions, after saying there's nothing else, the city would do another search and find out that there are more documents, sometimes hundreds more documents.
Yeah, I mean, as a journalist, I think if you ask just about any journalist in town, they would say, if anything, the Public Records Act is not strong enough because there's not any teeth in it. There is no compensation, no reimbursement for journalism organizations that file a suit to get reimbursed staff time that we have to put in. You can get attorney fees if you win, and that's it.
That's right.
So a lot of agencies, in my experience, just sort of flaunt it because they really don't think that the media is going to take them to court, let alone a member of the public who doesn't have deep pockets to go hire an attorney to begin with.
Yeah, no, that's right. The only way the Public Records Act is enforced is when you have people asking who have the means of hiring an attorney, and when they win their case, they get reimbursed for their attorney's fees. None of their other time is covered. Meanwhile, when the cities are stonewalling, all of their staff is being paid the entire time that they're blowing off the public and resisting turning over any information. So it's completely unfair to start with, and yet her approach was to make it even more unfair by making it impossible for you to get a lawyer. And worse than that, I mean, that's a horrible change in and of itself.
Yeah.
But worse than that is misrepresenting the nature of what she was doing to the legislature, not telling them that she was making this huge change. And she did it all on her own without going and talking to the mayor and the city council.
So they didn't know about that either.
Yeah, that's right. I was at the hearing when they shot her down. They were learning about it for the first time.
That's shocking. Another troubling aspect has been brought out in some recent news articles suggesting that she tried to bury allegations of child abuse involving people at the San Diego Junior Theater. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, so full disclosure, I represent the father who blew the whistle on this. He tried to get information from the city to find out what they were doing to make sure that the issue was fully investigated and to make sure this never happens again. As is often the case, the city stonewalled, didn't turn much over. I got involved to get him documents. What we learned in the course of getting documents is that Mara Elliott, when she received the complaint about child abuse allegations, instead of investigating it, she sent it to one of her campaign donors, a lawyer for the Junior Theater, and said, I haven't read this yet, but I recognize the person's name. So as the city's top law enforcement officer, even before finding out what was being alleged, she's leaking it to the lawyer for the subject of the investigation.
Yeah, and a donor. You don't do that. You're not supposed to tip off someone who might be under investigation.
Totally
or friends with someone who's under investigation.
Totally unheard of. It's beyond unprofessional. It's beyond unethical. But it is symptomatic of the way the office has been run for far too long.
Now, it wouldn't be fair for us to talk about all of her controversies, Corey, and for me not to ask you about your own legal career, where you've at times sparked some controversy yourself. Notably, a few years ago, iNews source ran some articles suggesting, among other things, that liens you filed on properties might have been efforts to fraudulently shield assets, and they criticized you for filing suits on behalf of some nonprofits that your family or close associates reportedly controlled. Could you please address those concerns for our listeners? And also, for the record, let us know, did you ever face any sanctions from the Bar Association or any court action for any of those allegations?
Yeah, sure. Good questions. So the issue with the liens, I'm a small law firm. I'm the lawyer, the couple others who work with me. My clients aren't big corporations. When you work for a big firm, and your clients are big corporations, they have lots of money. They give you a big fat retainer and you do work. My clients don't have that sort of money available. So in some situations when their case is going to be expensive, they will give our firm liens against property they own.
Mm-hmm.
There's a procedure we have to go through to disclose potential conflicts to them. They have to run it by an independent lawyer that they choose. Other than me making disclosures, they go decide whether they want to do this with the other lawyer. We have to go through that process anytime it happens. It's the only way these folks can afford to hire a lawyer.
So basically you're saying there were liens, but there was nothing illegal about the process.
Not only is it not illegal, the rules for lawyers have provisions that explicitly contemplate this sort of arrangement. As long as you follow the rules, it's perfectly fine.
Okay.
You asked another question about the organizations. I've represented lots of nonprofits. Mm-hmm. The same way that developers form entities when they build houses and then they, you know, don't want you to pierce the corporate veil, the law allows citizens to form nonprofits when they're working for the public good in order to protect their personal assets. It's totally legal. Lots of us know nonprofits all the time. That's the way it's done.
I run a nonprofit myself, and yes, we have a board, and we have that errors and omissions insurance, so
that's
the board's protected.
And you do all that stuff. And yes, I help my clients establish those. There's nothing wrong with it. Those reports by that organization, I've encouraged people to follow the money, because you can see that when they were writing those stories about me, their revenues increased by more than 100% in the year they were writing the stories about me. They started booking donations on their financials in excess of $400,000. And if you go look at the list of donors, they are wealthy individuals with business downtown where my clients were suing over the project. So I'd encourage anybody to just go follow the money.
So they might have had their own conflicts of interest, arguably.
No question in my mind that they did. The last question you asked is about the state bar. The answer is yes. As a result of those reports, there were two inquiries. I received a clean bill of health from the state bar in both of those instances. It's unfortunate that the source of the false reports that prompted those bar inquiries never reported that I was cleared. They know about it. They've not reported it. I appreciate you asking so I can set the record straight.
On a more positive note, Corey, can we talk about some of your successes as a public interest attorney? What are some of the most significant cases that you've won on behalf of taxpayers, voters, and the environment locally?
Sure. So in no particular order, I had a client who sued because the city was raising taxes to expand the convention center without a public vote. In California, new taxes require a public vote. There will be a public vote next year to raise taxes for the convention center. You can thank my client for fighting that lawsuit along with a now deceased watchdog named Mel Shapiro.
Mm-hmm.
Those two fought the lawsuits. We won that in the Court of Appeal. Other cases, we had a case against Walmart for essentially buying an election against a city. The voters put the proposal on the ballot. The city wasn't sure they wanted to do a special election because they're expensive. Walmart walked in with a check on the spot, wrote it to the city council and to the mayor, and they said, okay, no problem, now we'll put it on the ballot. That was a violation of the Brown Act because the public wasn't told it was going to happen. We sued over that, and the Court of Appeals concluded that if you violate the Brown Act, even if it's for the purpose of holding an election, the violation will invalidate the results of the election. That's how important the Brown Act is.
Yeah, very, very interesting. On an environmental front, what are some of the big cases you've handled there?
So one of my earliest cases was on behalf of San Diego Coast Keeper. At the time it was Baykeeper. Mm-hmm. A number of Marines were having to train in raw sewage up at Camp Pendleton. We sued to get the base to change that around. That was an important case. The men and women who were risking their lives ought not to have to be training in raw sewage.
Yeah.
I spent many, many years suing Walmart over their new stores to make sure that they were 100% green, which means solar, minimizing greenhouse gases, energy efficiency, things like that. There's a long list of those.
Yeah.
And then I've represented a number of community groups against, you know, harmful development where the city wasn't following the rules. Latest example is when the mayor and the city attorney tried to force a transitional housing program in the South Bay on those residents. Transitional housing is important. That's not the issue. But in the South Bay, they only have this one motel left. And this was where all the visitors stayed.
Ah.
So it's sort of a centerpiece of their economic development and their tourist-serving area. And they said that the Coastal Act didn't apply. We sued. The judge said, of course the Coastal Act applies. That's an example of trying to protect neighborhoods from overreach at City Hall.
Corey, are there any other issues that you would like to discuss, things you would like to accomplish if you're elected to city attorney?
Yeah, look, my goal in running is to get the politics out of the office. Right? Every client is entitled to objective, sound legal advice without the attorney trying to do what's in his or her best interests. The client comes first.
Mm-hmm.
And for too long, the city attorney's office has not put the clients first. City attorney's office will give advice confidentially, then tell the clients, you can't talk about it, you can't tell anybody what I told you. And that's just false. If the client wants to go say, this is what the attorney told us, the client should be free to do that. Our city attorneys hide behind confidentiality in order to push their agenda. When the next mayor and the next city council are seated, they need to know that there's somebody who understands municipal law, who is concerned first and foremost about the mayor and the council being successful on behalf of their constituents. I don't have any desire to seek other office. As I said at the beginning, I didn't have a desire to seek this one. But we're not making progress on huge issues, housing, homeless, environment, energy efficiency, transportation. All of these things are huge problems. We have huge deficits. Things just keep getting worse, and it's very often because the mayor and the city council are getting political advice masquerading as legal advice as opposed to just straight up legal advice.
Yeah, and running up big bills for taxpayers, defending in all these lawsuits that they're losing.
That's right.
So instead of spending it on some of the different things you've mentioned that maybe taxpayers would like their money spent
on. Right. I'm not out soliciting endorsements from people who are suing the city. In fact, I've said anybody who wants to donate to my campaign, you have to certify that you're not a lobbyist. If you go to my website to donate, you have to check the box that says, I'm not a lobbyist in the city of San Diego.
Wow, very good. That sounds very positive, Corey. For the record, we should mention that both you and your opponent, Mara Elliott, the incumbent, are registered Democrats. So far, no Republican has come forward that I'm aware of to announce they're running, but we certainly will. When the filing deadline, you know, comes around, we will be inviting anybody else who's on the ballot to come on the show and provide equal time listeners so that you can hear from everybody in the race.
Yeah. You should also make sure your listeners understand it is a nonpartisan race.
Correct.
And the advice that the city attorney gives should be nonpartisan. That's why I'm running.
Very good point. I understand that you actually have been a no-party preference in the past. You've, like many people. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we are speaking today with Corey Briggs, a prominent local attorney with a long track record of championing taxpayers, voter rights, the environment, and government transparency. And now he's a candidate running for the San Diego City Attorney's Office. Corey, I'm going to let you have the last word today. Can you let people know where they can learn more about your candidacy and if there's anything else that you would like our listeners to know?
You bet. You can go to www.coreybriggs.com, C-O-R-Y. There's no E. Go to the website. You can see what we stand for, what we're trying to accomplish in this election. If you have questions, there's a link there where you can contact me. People have been emailing and asking questions. They want to know about things going on in the city. As long as it's not privilege for one of my active clients, I'm happy to tell people anything I can.
Very good. Well, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thanks for having me.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Health Report. A deer mouse trapped during routine monitoring in Warner Springs has tested positive for the potentially deadly hantavirus, leading county officials to remind the public never to sweep up or vacuum up after rodents. If you find them in homes, garages, sheds, and cabins, instead, use wet cleaning methods. Hantavirus can cause deadly infections in people, and there is no vaccine or cure. It's not uncommon to find hantavirus in San Diego County, but you're not likely to be exposed to it as long as you keep wild rodents out of your living spaces and structures. Wild rodents, especially mice, are the main carriers of hantavirus. They can shed the virus in their urine, droppings, and saliva. The infected matter can then dry out, become airborne, and be inhaled if someone sweeps or vacuums to clean up rodent nests or droppings. Wild rodents generally live away from people, but if you do find them in your garage, shed, or house, you should always use wet cleaning methods to avoid becoming ill from hantavirus. First, seal up all holes larger than a dime to keep rodents from getting back into your home, shed, garage, or other structure. Eliminate rodent infestations immediately. Do not stir up dust in rodent-infested areas by sweeping or vacuuming. Ventilate affected areas by opening doors and windows for at least 30 minutes. Wear rubber gloves. Spray a mixture of 10% bleach and 90% water or other disinfectants onto dead rodents, droppings, nests, contaminated traps, and surrounding areas. Let the disinfectant stand for at least 15 minutes before cleaning. Clean with a wet sponge or a mop. Then place disinfected rodents and debris into two plastic bags, seal them, and discard in the trash. Wash gloves in a bleach solution, then soap and water, and dispose of them using the same double bag method. And finally, wash your hands thoroughly with soap and water. For more information, you can call the County Department of Environmental Health at 858-694-2888 or visit the Department of Environmental Health's webpage on hantavirus.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Kevin McLeod, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.